how are you people feeling? Are you up for a little bit of a mind bender?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. All right. This. What I thought I might do is just take you into the irky world of sex determination and sex reversals in frogs. Now, I don't know how well you know of sex determinations in any animal. Frogs are peculiar, I'll tell you that now. So what I might do is start off with, I assume you know something about human sex determination, do you?
No.
No? Okay, let's go.
We'll start. Look on a birth certificate.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And if they put an M, it means maybe. If they put an F, foolish.
Right. That is
great. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Now, what you probably would have been told at school is that sex determination is fixed from the time of conception by the sex chromosomes that you inherit. That is wrong. It is partly correct, but it is wrong more times than it's right. Now, where all of that comes from is that the people who write the school textbooks only ever consider the human perspective in this. And in the animal kingdom, I'm afraid we're only one species. And the way that we decide the sex of our offspring and that is quite different from the way other animals do it. And it's not fixed in most animal groups. So, for instance, for our species, if you can remember back to when you're at school, you're probably told that every human cell, except for the sex cells, has 46 chromosomes. Yep. Of those chromosomes, 44 of them are paired. And then there are two, the sex chromosomes, which may or may not be paired. If they're paired, if you have two identical sex chromosomes, an X and an X chromosome, you are female. And there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I shouldn't say that. You can do something about it now, but yeah, theoretically, you're a female. If you have unpaired sex chromosomes, if you have a big X chromosome and a little widgy-widgy Y chromosome, then you, theoretically, you're a male, so you have to put an M on your tax form, right? Now that's how it works with us. The problem, I shouldn't say the problem, but in our system, when, from the time of conception, when the first cell is formed with either an XX or an XY chromosome in it, and generally speaking, during your embryological and childhood development, you can't alter that. Now, what I'm about to tell you might shock you, but in the animal kingdom, that is unusual. That is not the norm. There are many, many more species that can change their sex during either their embryological life or during their young, either juvenile or young adult life, than can't.
Even mammoths?
The ones that find it hardest to do anything about changing their sex are typically the mammals and some birds. And once you step back from those groups, pretty well all of them can change their sex under different circumstances. Including frogs. Now, here's where we start to get into the complicated bits. Now, sex determination in other animal groups can be an XY system, like us, but that's relatively uncommon. You can have an XO system, which means that, yes, you have an unpaired sex chromosome because you only have one of them. Okay, you're missing the other one. And that sets you as a particular sex. Or you can have a unique chromosome, again, which is neither an X or a Y, and it's often designated as Z. It's an intermediate-sized chromosome with a central telomere, which gives you another combination again. Now, I have to put this in, which will confuse you, or you can just simply be haploid. You can just simply have the half number of chromosomes. Now, a lot of reptiles do that to determine sex. I won't talk about reptiles at all, so we'll leave that one out now. That's just another way of doing it. All right, so as I say, for most organisms, sexual determination or your gender is determined from the time of conception, but it is your potential gender only. Whether you ever achieve that sexual form or not then depends on the information on that sexual chromosome being triggered, if you like, or triggering off a series of developmental processes that will make you ultimately physically a male or physically a female. And that depends on what's referred to as the sex gene being activated. Now, in all vertebrates, and this is where the system, this is where it starts to fall down, or I shouldn't say fall down, this is why things aren't fixed. The sex gene is not located on the sex chromosome. So there has to be a messenger to operate from the sex chromosome to fire off the sex gene before you actually get any expression of sex. If you get anything that modifies that signal or changes that signal, you can change sex. Right? Okay. Now, that would be in the very, very early stages of the embryo. But this system also allows you to change sex in a more advanced animal, and I'll show you why. Right, let's go. Are you confused yet? Because it's going to get more entangled, but anyway, we'll see how we go. Right, so here we go. Here's a female. I hope you're not... Right, a female. So she has 44 normal or autosomal paired chromosomes and paired sex chromosomes. She's got two X's, right? So that, by definition, is a female. The male has 44, so far, right, nearly all is identical, except that he has the unpaired sex chromosome. He has an X and a Y. So 45 out of the 46 chromosomes are basically the same. Okay? There's one difference in humans. So that's referred to as the XY system. Okay. What I can tell you now is that in some mammals, in the XY system, the paired chromosome belongs to the male. Right? We're talking about what happens in this case with humans. Now, let's have a look at good old chickens, right? Chooks, as an example. Chooks have two sex chromosomes. They don't have an X and they don't have a Y. They have neither. Their sex chromosomes are totally different. They have one largish sex chromosome and one micro chromosome. The W chromosome is tiny. It's a micro chromosome. All right, so if you're a chicken and you have 76 normal chromosomes and a Z and a W, which are unpaired, guess what? You lay eggs. You're a female. All right? If you have 76 plus two of the Zs, you're a male. Can you have two of the Ws? If you inherited the two Ws, you won't survive. You'll die during embryological development. You can't exist. All right. Now, how uniform are these sorts of genetic things? They're not consistent across animal groups. For instance, consider the insects, right? Flies. Flies have two sex chromosomes. They have an X and a Y system, like us. We're related to flies, aren't we? No, not at all. Not even remotely, because their systems are reverse of ours. Right? The XYs, in this case, is the male. Yeah, that's right. Or they can be haploid. They can actually halve the number of chromosomes in the individual, in which case it will be a fully fertile male. Right? We can't do this. It wouldn't work with us. The whole system would collapse. Grasshoppers, this is another insect. What have they done? They don't have X or Y. Right? They've gone somewhere else for sex determination. They've used totally different chromosomes. And you can see, again, they've used a paired or an unpaired solitary chromosome for sex determination. So there's a lot of variations, even within individual animal groups. There's a lot of variation in sex determination. And I haven't even got the frogs yet. All right, keep going. Because frogs do things even more complicated than this. Okay, again, I'll just keep coming back to humans because I'm assuming you've got some background knowledge of him. So this is a typical human karyotype. So here's all your 46 chromosomes, all laid out as they would normally be when they're sorted. So they're ranked according to size and the position of the centromeres, right? So your biggest ones with central centromeres are all grouped together as A-type chromosomes, right? So they're paired, the B-type chromosomes are all paired, your C-types are all paired, your D-types, E's, F's and G's are all paired. And then, if it's a male, you're left with these two over, which, and they're unpaired. That's an X, so you can see the X actually belongs up here, it's actually a C-type chromosome. Okay, and the Y, if it belongs anywhere, it probably belongs down here with the G-type chromosomes. But they're unpaired. So that's a male system. Females, all of that's the same, except you've got two X's. So you've got two more chromosomes from the C group. Right? Okay, pushing on. Frogs. Right, what do frogs do? Well, you've got a choice. You've got a choice. And it's a bit like the insects, you know. When we looked at flies and grasshoppers, you see they used totally different chromosomal systems. Well, within the frogs, you find the same sort of things. Some frogs use an XXXY system, like ours, but in fact the reverse order. Or they don't use either of the chromosomes, but use two separate chromosomes entirely. They use a Z and a W system. Now, the first thing that should be running through your mind is, all right, do all the frogs that use this system have anything in common? No. They are not all from the same family. You can have frogs within a family but from different genera, one using that and one using that. Within species it's consistent. Within species supergroups it's consistent. Beyond that level it's not consistent. Okay.
Question at the back.
Does that mean that the families aren't right, or have they developed twice?
Ah, well, this is the problem. No one's too sure what this actually means. Some geneticists have said this is proof that frogs are paraphyletic, that they do not constitute, or I should say amphibians in particular, do not have a single ancestry. It's proof of something other than that, and that these are ancestral features that have somehow, for goodness knows what reason, have been retained. So we've got two lineages running within the amphibians. There are more geneticists who've looked at that and said, well, that's hogwash, because if you look at the genes that are on these chromosomes, they are incredibly closely related. They just simply put them on different chromosomes. The genes are still there. The same genes are still there. They're just put somewhere else. That's all. And why does it matter? The only reason we get upset about that is because we're mammals, and in us, gene positions are fixed. So you can map chromosomes and say the genes are here and they will always be there unless there's some major mutation. Why can't you move the genes around? Why do they always have to be on the same chromosome all the time? Does it matter? There are some animal species who move their genes around constantly. They move them around from generation to generation. And a good example of that would be the velvet worms. Do any of you know what velvet worms are? Velvet worms, the group they belong to are called onychophorans. They look like worms, except they've got little stumpy legs, like a segmented worm. They have the most unusual reproductive systems you can imagine. They usually, males harpoon the females. They physically, some females have a urinogenital opening, but often the males don't use it. When they inseminate the female, they will physically harpoon the female, force the sperm in through the body wall, and fertilise the female that way. Right? And where they inseminate the female, where they puncture the body wall, can be almost anywhere. It can be in the back of the head, the tail, the foot, whatever, it doesn't matter. Right? Now, the interesting thing is that when the geneticists started looking at the gene makeup of velvet worms, they were shocked, because in one species, the first work of this was done on a species of velvet worm from the Blue Mountains, the blue one. And the people who did this work were shocked, because they found the level of genetic diversity between an adult velvet worm and its offspring could be as high as 50%. In other words, the genetic difference between an adult velvet worm and its own children could be greater than the genetic difference between all mammals in the world. Huh? And then the next generation can have that much variation or difference again. And theoretically, that shouldn't happen. Theoretically, it couldn't happen. How, if they were right, they were using a system like ours, how can you match up chromosomal pairs again? How do you do your duplication? How do you do it? Obviously, you're using a system that's entirely different. And the rules, it just really drives home the fact that we assume that the way that mammals do it, the way that humans do it, is the only way that you can operate these systems. And it's not true. It's not even remotely close to being true. There are lots of other ways of doing this. And the outcome can be totally different again, such as changing your sex when you need to. Now, we never consider that as a possibility, usually, unless we want to go to surgical means of doing it. But there will be times during the life of an animal when, in fact, it would be convenient to change the sex. Okay, next. Okay, what we're looking at here are some froggy chromosomes. Okay, so this time what we've done is we've paired up the chromosomes wherever we can. Now, the top frog here is coming from a frog that's using the XY system. Okay? Now, in this particular case, the frog that we're looking at is a female, has paired X chromosomes. So they're all paired in this case. The next frog down here is a ZW system. These are the ZWs here, which we're calling at the moment, in this diagram anyway, the sixth pair. You can see one's bigger than the other. They're an unmatched system. Okay. The sex chromosomes for this XY system are the smallest. The X chromosomes, the two X chromosomes in this one, are the two smallest. So they're not Zs, they're not Ws. They're totally different chromosomes that are being used for sexual transmission. This is why it gets so confusing in frogs, and it's part of the reason why in stuff like sex determination in frogs, people didn't work on it, because for a long time, no one could get a grip on what control mechanisms are operating in this. It's probably the safest way to say it. Right, keep going. So I'm going to try and explain this to you if I can. Maybe it won't work, but we'll give it a go. All right. So we're back to sex chromosomes. What do? They determine your potential, whether you potentially could become a male or a female or both. And in most animals, this is the message I'm really trying to drive home first to you, is that at the point of conception, for most animals, you can still be both. It's not fixed. Right? You may go down the path of being either male or female to start with, but it's not fixed. Alright, your ultimate body form, right, your gender, is determined by not just the presence of those sex chromosomes, but by the activation of the sex gene. And this is where it all changes. If the message coming from the sex chromosome is changed in some way, the outcome is going to be different. So, in humans, the XX chromosome, so a female, will activate the gene, and the embryo obviously will get all the estrogens and all the rest of it, will develop the secondary characteristics and therefore go on to become a female. Now that's the easy story. That's what we've always been taught. That's nice. That's simple. But what happens if some external factor interferes with Anyway, what happens if some external factor interferes with this process, with the activation of the sex gene? Then it doesn't matter what's listed on your chromosomes at all. If that message can't get through, it doesn't matter what's there. It's now irrelevant. The only bit that counts is the message that's actually coming from the sex gene now. And if that's a different message to what's coded on your chromosomes, who cares? Well, I suppose you do, because it then determines what sex you're going to be. But it's, right? It's not what you were genetically coded to be in the first place. Right, keep going. All right. Now, so, sex changing is actually very, very widespread in the animal kingdom. where most people started looking at this, and work on this started in the 1940s, looking at sex reversals in fish. And the reason they started looking at it in fish is because a lot of fish were starting to be farmed, commercially farmed. And some of the farmers were getting a bit disturbed because they would have a whole lot of little baby fish and they're all the same sex. And I think, well, that's no good. You know, we're obviously going to need both sexes or else we won't have the next generation. It wasn't until they started to rear some of these animals up to get them up to bigger sizes that all of a sudden they realised, I started off with all females and now I've got 50-50 male females. What happened? Right? So it was from those sorts of things that people began to realise that, you know, animals can change their sex. There are a lot of fish that spend their early days as one sex and then as life goes on, they either stay that sex or they will change it. A classic example, for those of you who swim around Sydney or do snorkeling around Sydney, you all know the blue grouper that occurs around Sydney. It starts off as a female. They're all females. Right? And it's not until they get to about five or six that they're actually given the choice. Do you want to stay female or would you like to become a male? You're given the choice. Okay? And if you're going to become a male, well then you change and you become that dirty brown coloured fish that you see swimming around the rocks. But all sorts of other fish do this as well. There's been a lot that have been studied now. The clownfishes, yeah, the wrasses. There's been a whole swag of them that have been studied. And they all can change species at certain times. So, to give you an example, right, school of clownfish runs on a hierarchy system with a female as the dominant fish, the dominant animal in the group. If she dies, what happens is that the next most dominant fish, which is usually a male, changes sex to become the dominant female and takes her place. And once he's done that, further down the ladder, somebody will need to take his place and move up the ladder. Right? So there's this ripple on effect right down through the whole community. Wrasses go from female to male most commonly, with the largest female changing into a male and taking over with the disappearance of previous males. And so it goes on.
Can it work in the reverse too?
Yes, they can. They can. Some animals can't, but the majority of them, especially in the frog world and the fish world, they can. They can go both ways. What seems to happen when you go through the animal kingdom, and particularly by the time you get up into the mammals, the ability to manipulate your sex gets less and less and less. In other words, you're locked into it really almost from the time of conception. So for species like us, from the point of conception, that's it, we're fixed. We can't change it genetically from that point onwards. But what I'm trying to get across to you is that that is odd. That is not a normal situation at all. That is odd. And it restricts us in many ways. If you're thinking about this, you can probably see there is in fact great survival value in being able to change your sex, particularly when times demand it. Right? Okay, next one. All right, how do you actually do this then? All right, well we clearly can't do sex reversals. Once the sex gene is activated in us, that's it. The sex is determined and that's the end of it. Okay, with sex change operations and so on, what they do there basically is do physical alterations but then infiltrate you with the sex hormones of whatever the other sex is that you want to become. So they're trying to flood the system with artificial hormones, if you like, to try and conceal the genetic information which is still there, saying basically you are going to be that original sex. Sexual reversals are possible. Now this is the important bit, because the testes and the ovaries in all vertebrates are derived from exactly the same tissue, the same embryological tissue. Okay? So if that, in many animals, right, the undifferentiated sex organs that are in the embryo may be retained. Now this is critical stuff now, because what, when you probably know, when you started off as an embryo, you were sexually neutral. You were nothing. You had gonads, but they were not developed to become either testes or ovaries. You were neither. And at some point, the sex gene was activated, right? The instructions went through to say, righto, okay, this one's got two X chromosomes, it's going to be a female, bang out the oestrogen, right? Develop all the structures that are necessary to be a female. That's fine. But the embryological tissues there could have got exactly the opposite instruction and could have, you could have then been told to have progressed on to become a male had you been given the alternate instruction. So the potential is there, even within us, at very early stages, to be either sex. That's I hope that's not too big a surprise to you, but that's the way it is. That's why, for instance, unfortunately, some people are born as hermaphrodites. They only get partial development of the ovary.
So are you saying, Arthur, that there's a message from the sex gene which isn't on the sex chromosomes?
It's not on the sex chromosomes.
To be, that triggers you to be male or to be female?
Yeah, it's most of the operation of the sex gene is through then the production of the sex chromosomes, which result in the development of your secondary sexual characteristics. Right? But just bear in mind, you have the potential, because you all of us start off with these undifferentiated gonads, we have the potential to be either sex. We're just waiting for the instruction, the message, to say which way to go. Okay. As you develop, so let's suppose you get the message and you're going to become a female. What happens in humans is that in the embryological cell mass, it is only the inner part of that cell mass that develops to become ovary. The outer part of that cell mass, which is primary testicular tissue, is still there. So girls, I'm afraid you are carrying rudimentary testes within you, whether you like it or not. They are still present, clinging to the very top parts of your ovaries. Huh? But you didn't get the instruction to develop them, so they haven't developed. For guys, it's the other way around. It's the outer part of the embryological mass that develops to become the testes. And the inner core was primary ovarian tissue. And yes, you are carrying primary ovarian tissue inside of you as well. But you never got the instruction to develop it. If you got that instruction, would it develop? My word, it would. Okay? So, let's keep going. Chooks, good old chooks. People have kept chooks for yonks. People have done genetics on chooks for goodness knows how long. And yet most people don't know anything really much about sexual selection in chooks. All right, so let's talk about chooks. Female chickens have one functional ovary. This is pretty good for a bird that's really whacks out the eggs all the time and all the rest of it. It's the ovary on the left-hand side. Now, she's born with two primary gonadal masses. One of them goes on to develop a functional ovary. The other one is just sitting there as an undeveloped gonadal mass. The right one is just sitting there, untriggered. And this is in all chooks, right? Okay. So when the chicken's sex genes kick in, right, it's only the left ovary that develops, and that's what she's laying the eggs from the whole time. That's fine. The right gonad is yet to be defined. And obviously, if you send it the message to say, be a boy, it'll be a boy. Of course it'll be. Now, people realise this first off more or less by accident, because there are some diseases that affect chickens that actually result in destruction of the left ovary, or destruction of the ovary, I should say. They only have one functional ovary. And when that happens, because they're not getting the message anymore about being female, the testes start to develop on the opposite side. So what ends up happening when these chickens recover from the disease? They're not chickens anymore, they're roosters. Right? And so the chook farmer all of a sudden has got a problem, because instead of having an egg layer, now he's going to have to chop his head off and sell it to me. Right? So, okay, we'll keep going on. We'll come back to frogs in a minute. Okay, now, this is where we're getting on to the whys. Animals change sex in response to a range of environmental cues, such as age. They might do it as they get older. They might do it in response to temperature, particularly temperature during incubation. And for those of you who do anything with reptiles, we'll know all about temperature-dependent sex determination in reptiles, I hope. They can do it purely and simply because of the presence of other individuals. So if you think about it, in those examples we gave of animals where there's a strict hierarchy, if an animal is removed from the hierarchy, that's the cue for somebody else to change sex to take its place. Right? Now that one's harder to follow. That's harder to actually work out the mechanism, because that almost sounds like, oh, hang on, that's almost like it being triggered by conscious thought or something. It's not. The pathway is not very well defined yet, but it's not certainly done by that. The health of the animal will determine what sex it is sometimes, and whether or not there are other mates available will determine what sex you are. Okay, now, of these, temperature-dependent sex is without doubt the best study of the lot. And it's studied in reptiles. What do we see in reptiles? There's two patterns to how sex is determined in baby reptiles. Pattern one says, all right, at low temperatures, the eggs will hatch, predominantly as males. Increase the temperature, you start to swing the balance, you start getting a lot more females. All right, that's one pattern. The other pattern is that at intermediate temperatures, in the mid-range temperatures, you're going to get all males. Drop the temperature, female. Increase the temperature, female. Next one. As an example, this is the sort of data you get. So here you've got a snapping turtle, okay? At between about 25 to 28 degrees incubation temperature, you're going to get mostly males hatching. Drop the temperature down here, the girls start to appear on the scene in big numbers, very few boys. Increase the temperature, girls start appearing, not many boys. Okay? This is all to do with the activation of that sex gene. The genetic coding was there from day one. It's the activation of that gene. Right? Consider this is the red-eared slider, the common old turtle now that we're trying to get rid of from most of the ponds around Sydney. Okay? So, in very, very, in lower temperatures, if you like, nearly all males, 100% males. As you start to drop the temperature, the sex ratio changes pretty quickly, and by the time you get up to about 31 degrees, it's all female, 100% female hatching. No males. So you've totally changed the transmitted information coming from the sex gene, just by temperature alone. Crocodiles and alligators have, again, one of these mid-range sorts of things. At low temperatures, you're female. In between temperatures, you're male. Low temperatures, or high temperatures, you're back to being all females again. Okay? So, and that, as I said, that those sort of mechanisms have been studied in quite some detail for lots and lots of reptiles. So you can determine pretty quickly what the sex of your individuals will be by the temperature. Some people would say, isn't that a silly thing to do? Is it? The reason most people look at that and think it's a silly thing to do, they say, oh, well, what happens, let's suppose, you know, global warming, right? And all the temperatures shift up, then all of a sudden you might just get all males. What you've got to bear in mind is that these animals are laying across a range of different substrates with different temperature profiles. And so some of them would have been laid in a lower temperature environment, some of them would be laid in a higher one. And yes, you're right, if global warming comes, it will be a shift, but you're still going to get a range of sex, depending on what the actual temperature was that they laid in. So this system still, on average, produces you roughly a 50-50 sex ratio. No, unfortunately, it's a chemical reason that's controlling all of this, and it's to do with the release of the sex gene activator.
What it achieves, I'm saying.
The result.
What it achieves is that at any extreme, you produce females which can reproduce, mm-hmm. whereas males can't.
Well, yes, under this mechanism you do, but up here, that's not true. Yeah, for the type 2 system, that's true. That's true. All right, next, move on. Okay, now let's get into a real complication here. What happens if you introduce something that mimics the sex gene activator into the environment? I think you probably appreciate straight away there's going to be mixed messages going through the system here. Very quick smart. And unfortunately, this is happening now in the real world. Some of the herbicides that are commercially produced are very, very similar to the sex gene activator protein. So for animals that are exposed to these herbicides, sex reversals may result, or you can get other changes in sexual development in these animals. Depending on the dose that they actually get exposed in, you can either get a sex reversal or you can get something horrible being produced. The one I suspect you've all heard about is atrazine. Yeah? Have you heard of atrazine, anyone?
Yes.
Okay. Atrazine, I want to bring this up because it's very topical in America at the moment and it should be topical here. Atrazine was banned in Europe in 2003. It's a very widespread used herbicide in Australia and America. It still is. It was banned in 2003 because there were epidemiological studies shown that in the farming districts where they used atrazine, there were abnormally high rates of prostate cancer and breast cancer in humans. Right? We use a very, very similar sex coding mechanism. We're not immune to these tricks. We're not immune at all. Okay, so they banned it. Now, it wasn't banned in the US, and we didn't ban it here because the US didn't ban it. And we tend to follow very much what the Americans do. So the Americans didn't ban it. Now, the reason that, I should justify that a little bit, the reason that the Americans didn't ban it was that they did do controlled laboratory studies, admittedly using rats and mice, and they found that atrazine, even in reasonably high doses, did not cause problems with sex reversals. And for that reason, it wasn't bad. What's come out more recently is a whole series...
Stop for a sec.
Yep. Very effective herbicides.
And it's commonly used by councils as well.
Yep. All set?
Okay.
Okay. Now, the problem really began to arise about 5 years ago. People started doing, probably 7 years ago. People started doing field studies in the US, and they were finding initially frog populations in the US that were out of balance. The sex ratios were ridiculous. In some populations of frogs, they were finding sex ratios of 95 to 5. Right, they were so far out of kilter. Now, these populations were later analysed, tissue sections were taken from the frogs. The only thing that showed up in the tissues was atrazine. Now, so what they did was they then went back and tested the pond water and stuff that these frogs in. And the first samples that were done, nothing was detected. And it wasn't until later on that somebody developed a very, very, well, basically a modified technique for detecting atrazine in very low concentrations, that all of a sudden it became blatantly obvious what was happening. Atrazine causes these effects in very, very low doses. If you expose the tissue or cells at high doses, you flood the whole system and it has no effect. It has no effect at all. But in low doses, it's potent. It totally blocks the activator protein. It usurps it. So what they did was they found that for frogs anyway, concentrations of atrazine are down at about 2.5 parts per billion. So we're talking, for most detected systems, this is the limit of detectability. This is when atrazine is most potent in terms of invoking sex reversals. Now, when this data first came out, the American authorities said, does it matter? I mean, that's not going to affect humans, so it doesn't matter. Of course, people who are interested in wildlife said, yeah, of course it matters. But how do you know it doesn't affect humans? How do you know? Because they'd never done the epidemiological studies in the US. And it's only in the last 2 years that they've actually got around to doing those studies. And guess what? Iowa, I've forgotten all those central western states, but basically all the all of the states that grow maize, sorghum or sweet corn in broad acre all use atrazine galore, and the number of birth defects, sexual birth defects in their embryos is massive. The number of hermaphrodites born is massive.
Humans.
Yeah. Right? So all of a sudden, the epidemiological data is saying it does have an effect. What are you going to do about it? And the, but the effect is being produced at concentrations down in the 2, 3, 4 parts per billion range, right? Which of course was never tested in the original clinical trials. They always tested at concentrations much higher. Because they assume, you know, if you up the concentration, then you're more likely to see a result. And it wasn't true. Yes?
Do you know the lifetime of the atrazine in the...
No, I don't know. Okay, so next one. So, this is what's happening in the US at the moment. It's all been triggered by the EPA in the US. Basically, they went to the government and said, we would like to ban atrazine. The government said, there's too many vested interests who would lose money if you did that. I don't think you can do that. So what the EPA has done, and they've done this off their own bat, and it's probably a very brave thing for a public service organisation to do it, they are effectively running a plebiscite in the US where they are running a campaign asking people, the question really is, would you like to see atrazine banned? And so they're putting out information, they're supposed to be presenting neutral information, you know, impartial information, which they do. They show slides and tissues and present the epidemiological data. But there are community groups now, such as Save the Frogs, who are out there big time campaigning hard now. So forget the American presidential election. They're campaigning hard here because they need as many people as possible to get back to the EPA to say, ban atrazine. Now, remember, this is a plebiscite, so it means the politician can still disregard it if they choose to.
And voting isn't compulsory?
No, there's no compulsory voting in any of this sort of stuff. So this is what's happening in the US right now. So people, you know, the concern has finally hit the surface and people are not happy with a lot of things. It's certainly not happy with the way that atrazine, the effects of atrazine have really been kept quiet for so long on people. Okay, keep going. So, atrazine effects, I've basically said all this, but this is where it really starts to express itself as cancers of the sex organs, birth defects, particularly of the sexual organs, various other malformations. Let alone sexual reversals, hermaphrodism, all the rest of it that goes with it. And it's all related to atrazine. Because it interferes with the protein coming from the sex gene. Right, next one, go. We're back to frogs again. We finally got back to frogs again. Now, frogs, their gonads are internal. They don't descend the body and move externally like they do in male humans. Like all vertebrates, the ovaries and the testes develop from the same embryological tissue. So the potential to be male and female is there. Now, what's different in frogs, from us in particular, is that the undifferentiated gonad remains in the adult. A bit like in the chook. Remember I told you in the chook, one ovary develops and the other one doesn't? It stays as an undifferentiated mass. What happens in frogs is that on both sides, where the sex glands, sex organs are, they develop halfway. And so, for instance, if you have a look, this is a photograph of a toad, a good old cane toad that we've dissected. There's the testes, and sitting on the top there is this, you can see this blobby, pinkish lump. It's undifferentiated gonad. Now, when I was a student, we actually did this as an experiment in third year, where with live toads, you remove the testes and watch what happens to that. It develops into a functional ovary. The frogs change sex.
So is that picture there, male or female?
That's a male. Oh. Right? The female part of this is inactive.
Yeah.
The male part is functional and producing sperm. Okay? So physically, if you remove that, that would become a functional female. Or if you use the sex gene activator, you could activate that as well. Okay? Now, I'm showing you that to show that the potential for frogs to change sex is there, and it's in a much easier format than it is, for instance, in us. Because the dormant part of the embryological tissue of the other sex in us is difficult to get at. It's actually encapsulated. It's not meant to be fired off again. Whereas these, it is. If the need comes, change sex. Okay? So this blobby bit, this undifferentiated gonad that you can see sitting on top of the sex organ, has a name. It's called Bidder's organ, and it's normally dormant, but it can be reactivated. Right, keep going. We're getting towards the end now. I'll give you a rest in a second. Now, because I want to tell you about these guys, African reed frogs. Finally, somebody has spent some time looking at sex reversal in a natural population of frogs. Finally. The species they chose was a ripper, absolute ripper. Right? They picked African reed frogs, Hyperoleus. The species, they did the common reed frog, which is Viviflavins. It's the weirdest species you could ever imagine, and I'll show you in a minute why. But why they chose this one is that the species was known to change sex regularly. Right? Both ways, from male to female or female back to male. It was known to change sex. And they wanted to have a look and see how and why. You know, how is this all going about? Now, in the African reed frogs, adults, be they male or female, carry both ovarian and testicular tissue, which is actually gone beyond being in the dormant state. They actually have let's suppose you're a female, they will have functional ovaries, but they'll have semi-functional testes. Okay, so externally, as near as you can tell, it's a female. You wouldn't know the difference until you dissected them and had a look and said, that's a bit odd. You know, if it was a female, then the testicular part of it would be partially developed, but not producing sperm. Right? Now, so the opportunity, if you like, for these animals to change sex is really good. It's something they can do relatively easily. Okay, now, if there's a shortage of mates of one sex, so let's suppose for some reason you're down at the pond and there's only guys there. Where's the girls? And it's breeding season. What do you do? Well, if you were human and that sort of situation happened, well, you'd play cards. You know, you couldn't do much else. But these guys have got a solution. And the solution is, and we don't know how this is decided, but some of the, for instance, if you had a heap of females, you know, would choose to physically change sex. So they would activate the other part of the gonad and become male, or vice versa, depending on which sex was in least abundance.
Within a few days or what?
No, it takes them about 2 weeks. It's not long. See, and the reason is because the other part of the gonad is already partially developed, so it doesn't actually take them long to do it. The more difficult part, going from female to male is quite easy. That's the quickest one. Going from male to female is slower because they have to regrow the oviducts. But that can be done. Okay, so sex reversal is normal in this species. It's practiced in every generation, in every population. Okay, it is the way you do things. The exact pathway here is not known. So you're back to, all right, when the frogs are all sitting around, they say, well, hang on, we haven't got enough girls here. How do you then translate that to the production of the sex activator? Can it be a conscious decision? No, again, we think not, but we don't know. That's the step in the pathway that's still dodgy. We don't know quite how that works. The chemical step from then on, from the activation of the sex hormone and that, is easy. You can follow it the rest of the way. Right, keep going. I think we're almost at the very end now.
Yeah.
This is the species that they're working on. Viridi flavus. The reason it's probably the most diverse frog species in the world, it has 60 defined subspecies. Now just think about it, 60 defined subspecies. And this is within the one species. These are four, if you like, of the variations that you can get within this species. So this guy is quite happy to muck genes around. It's not a problem. It doesn't interfere with the animal at all. And mucking sex around is just as easy as mucking your colour or mucking your body shape around or anything else. It doesn't matter. Okay? Fantastic. But it just, you know, it's the other side of the game to the way we are. We're just locked into the one pathway pretty well. And that's it. We get no say. Whereas they do. Okay, next one. Is there another one? No, there we go. The parting statement. Finish off. So changing sex occurs in more species of vertebrates than not. So we're the oddballs in the world rather than the, you know, the paragons. It's less common in mammals and birds. And it's likely that all early vertebrates could change sex as required. So if you like, as we've developed and become more specialised as a mammal, we've started to lose this ability. Sex reversals are much easier in species where there is little physical difference between the sexes, for obvious reasons. And that's where I'm going to finish. See what you do. Now, there will be a quiz on this.
That's right, X or Y.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure you do. Go on.
I was just going to say, with that species, I can see that they're sort of interchangeable. With other frog species, how long would it take to change sex?
This is the real problem we've got. That's the only species that's been looked in detail to date. And that's only happened in the last 2 years. So people haven't looked at sex changes in frogs very much because of that complication with the four sex chromosomes. It really makes things a lot more complicated. And so generally they've left it alone and stuck with things that are easy to understand, like temperature-dependent sex in reptiles. That's a lot easier thing to follow.
Anecdotal evidence of, captive frogs?
No. And I've kept a lot of frogs and stuff, and I'm not aware of it happening in frogs that I've kept as pets. So, yes, maybe it's uncommon in Australian frogs, but if it's not common, I'd like to know why not. So I don't know. And maybe we should be looking a lot closer at the animals that we are keeping as pets too. Because I know, I can think back to the early days when I was keeping frogs, and I know a few times I've said, I had a girl green tree frog here, and then next year it's croaking. So I don't know. Yeah.
What system of chromosomes did that species that you showed at the end have that does
this? It was just a good old XY. Yeah. So, yeah.
With snails, is that both male and female? Have you got anything to say about that?
No, I don't want to venture into snails at all. No, that's yet another comment. As you read more and more of this, you begin to realise just how many variations there are within sex determination. And you know, when you think of things like snails and that, we sneer, you almost look down and say, oh, it's an hermaphrodite, so there's something wrong with it. But when you think about it, in terms of population survival strategy, an hermaphrodite has probably got the best of all worlds. Because even if you can't find a mate, and this is true of snails, you can self-fertilise.
There is, Arthur, a Caribbean tribe where the children, when they reach puberty, change sex.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I'm not sure what the mechanism is there. Yeah. I'd have to look that one up. Do you know any more about it?
I've got a video at school.
It's
hyped to be male.
I'll
give you a copy.
Yeah. Do you remember, do they give any details on how...
No, they just tell the story, but they don't do any kind of hormonal studies.
Yeah, okay. Be interesting. No? Yeah, Grant? Yeah.
in the Caribbean.
Is that what was happening? Right. Okay. Okay, so again, it's going to come back to the sex activated gene. Yeah, good. Good. There you go. See, and you thought it was dead straightforward being either male or female, didn't you? Okay, right. I'm not going to say anymore. You must have scrambled brains by now.